stories. You know, when I came to, you know, after you stopped drinking, you know, most of you guys know this. It's like preaching to the choir. There's probably some new people here. You know, the big book says alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. There's a lot of symptoms besides the booze. It says unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism, you know, accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and true happiness will not at all. Apparently, there are consequences to being an alcoholic. There are consequences to being an alcoholic. Drinking is just one symptom, one consequence. That's the smallest thing. It's the smallest thing. You drink for about 10, 15, 20 years. You fall on your ass. You destroy yourself. You come in, you stop drinking, and then you deal with the real shit for the rest of your life, you know? Because the real disease centers in your mind, not your body. And then you come in and they immediately hit you with the second step, which has nothing to do with drinking. Has to do with being insane. I know it has to be insane because we're supposed to be restored to sanity. You don't restore sane people to sanity. You restore insane people to sanity. And don't worry if you don't know why you're insane or how you're insane, because if you continue to live your life on this planet, this fallen world, the next 10, 15, 20 years, you will come to realize that you're nuts. You'll realize that they're nuts. Now, they're nuts. I understand. They're crazy. It's crazy. They're as nutty as you are. They just don't drink. You know, that's okay. They do other things. You know what I mean? But you'll realize somewhere during the whole process that they're driving you crazy, and it's a short fucking drive. Let me tell you something. They're driving you crazy. And so you can sit around blaming them and saying, you know, how long must I be with this perverse generation or whatever the heck you want to say. Or you can say, how the hell am I going to live in this world without drinking and not blow my flipping brains out? And if you hang around here long enough, you'll see that there are people here that have been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, that have lost fear of economic insecurity and lost fear of people. And you'll see there are people that are sober. You'll be sober and they'll be sober, but it'll be like the difference between me playing golf and Tiger Woods playing golf. You know, I play golf. Tiger Woods plays golf. Look, but that's a lie. I don't play golf. I have golf clubs. I got golf balls. Every once in a while I go out there, you know. Tiger Woods plays golf, okay? You know, the bottom line is they're sober and they're sober. You know, the guys I used to hang out with that loved me and I loved them at 30, 40, 50 years, right? They were serious contenders. They weren't a bunch of 50-year-olds with the emotional maturity of angry 13-year-olds. You know, when I was a child, I thought like a child, I acted like a child. When I became a man, I put childish things away. You know, so the bottom line is this is all about growing up. Growth and maintenance and growth of a spiritual condition and becoming an adult and growing the hell up. That's why in the sixth step says this is a step that separates the men from the boys. You know, it separates the men from the boys. It is, I sponsored hundreds of men, really. I don't know if they're men. It sponsored hundreds of people in men's bodies that really acted like thumb-sucking crybabies, you know, and chasing women, chasing cars, chasing money, chasing all the shit they were chasing before they got here. It didn't help them. And continuing to chase it, getting divorced, never having a relationship, always thinking about themselves, not giving a crap about anybody else. You know? I've done that deal myself personally, and that's a hard thing to get rid of. That's not as easy to, you know, that's not as easy as alcohol. Alcohol is pretty easy to get rid of. You may have to, you know, do the dance for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 years to get to the point to get rid of it, or you'll die drunk or miserable or something like that. But after a while, you just get sick and tired. You drink enough, you'll have some really bad, the wheels will fall off your bicycle. And you'll have some real shit happen. And then you'll wake up one day, you'll be 3 months sober, and you'll realize you're crazy. You'll have 10,000 voices, all bad shit. And all it's 10,000 thoughts coming at you at the same time, all bad shit about you and other people. You'll go to sleep thinking about that asshole. You'll wake up thinking about that asshole. You'll drive to work thinking about that asshole. You'll be murdering people in your mind. You'll be saying things to yourself and out loud like, they don't know who they're fucking with, and why is this always happening to me, and life is shit, and I'm having a bad year. How do you have a bad fucking year? You know what I mean? How do you have a bad year, you know? Isn't there like one bright spot, you know? Some guy comes up and he says, I'm having a bad day. And he told you, I'm having a bad day. You having a bad day? He says, yeah. I said, would this conversation be included in that? He says, no, this is okay. So you're not having a bad day. You know, what happened? You had a bad 5 minutes, 2 minutes ago, you're like an alcoholic, you're like a drama queen. Anything that, you know, how are you doing? I'm doing great. He says, oh, you must be getting your own way. You learn a lot of shit. You know, you learn about a lot of stuff. So, you know, I came in here, I didn't have a story. Nobody has a story. What's your story when you come here? You have no idea who you are, what's going on. My story was, it's not my fault. I'm not the brain. You don't understand. I'm an if only a yes butter. I had no clue as to who I was, what I was. I had it all wrong. I was selfish. I was self-centered. No, I didn't know this shit. This shit I'm saying to you, you know where I got this? Out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Some guy started this thing, wrote down some stuff. They studied the Bible. They wrote down this thing. They got sober. They got well. They got excited. They said, what the hell did they do? They write this down. And bam, all of a sudden they have this thing that describes exactly what my problem is, except I don't think so. You hang around for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. You get a new perspective based upon repeated humiliations. The final question is self-sufficiency. As John Wayne, my spiritual mentor, has always said, you know, he always says this. He says, you know, life is tough, and if you're stupid, it's even tougher. So you keep on doing the same shit over and over again, sober. You get the shit beat out of you. The people hate you. You're worried about other people. You're going in, you're having all sorts of problems. You're broke because you spend money you don't have, buying shit you don't need to impress people you don't like, to try to make yourself feel better because you're a nothing. You're always going to be a nothing. You put something in your body, you become an almost, when you're a nothing, almost, it's the top of the world. And you're trying to figure out, okay, I'm sober, I'm not drinking. What the frick is wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Because you know, you're better. You know, at times in AA, you, the first 10 years, 20 years, you know, you feel better, you look better, you're having a better time. The thrill of victory, that, but every once in a while, like 4 or 5 or 10 times a week, you know, you're lathering up in the shower and you're saying shit like, pretend yourself, you're lathering up in the shower and you're saying, oh, fucking asshole. I'd kill myself. What a jerk I am. I'm such a piece of shit. I'm never going to get this done. You look around the shower to see who the hell's saying that shit to you, you're the only one there. This is what you tell yourself every other day. You're either telling yourself you're the greatest thing in the world, unappreciated, nobody understands how wonderful you are, or you're telling yourself you're a piece of shit and you're crazy. And you got, when you got those two voices going, you know, sets up kind of emotional friction, you know, a nervous disposition. It's a nervous disposition. You got a couple shots of scotch, man, it just, whoa, comes together and you don't have that shit anymore, you know? And, but you're not drinking scotch because that doesn't work. So then you got to sort of live with it. Say, how do you live? You got like a, I said, have a split personality. I said, I wish I could get down to 2. I'm like all over the place. I'm like Sybil. You know, I got 18,000 things going on. Mm. I said, what the hell's wrong with it? It's called alcoholism. That's what alcoholism is. It's not the drinking. As a matter of fact, if you don't take care of the alcoholism, if you don't, you know, it's not the craving. It's not the craving. The craving is you take the first drink and then you got to have another one. It's like potato chips. I actually am a potato chip holic. It's hard to tell that looking at me, but unbelievable. Got Fatty Arbuckles over here laughing at me. You know what I mean? Well, we're in the same boat, okay? That's how you can tell somebody's sober for a long period of time. They're huge, you know what I mean? Huge. All my mentors were huge, you know? Yeah, give me another Malton, you know? It's a serious disease.
That's what I aspire to.
You aspire to that. So you better start working on it, you know? This is, by the way, this is my emotional support human. Let him see it. We got about as many people on. He's my emotional support human, okay?
There you go.
I need all the help I can get on this, okay? For those of you that thought this was going to be like a regular AA meeting, I'm so sorry to disappoint you. Thank you very much, okay? So this is the deal. So, you know, so you realize after a while you're and you know, unfortunately, getting well in AA, and hopefully if you ever get to the point where you have emotional sobriety and the next frontier, Bill Wilson said the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. Hopefully, to get to that point, I'm 10 years sober. I'm saying to one of my mentors, I'm saying, what the hell is wrong with me? I'm 10 years sober. Bill Wilson, 23 years sober. I have it on my email when I said that. 23 years sober, wrote an essay, The Next Frontier, Emotional Sobriety. He wrote it because he was going into a deep depression at 23 years sober. And if you read it, he was basically saying, what the frick is wrong with me? I'm an old timer. I see other old timers. We're not drinking. We beat the drinking game. We're in the drinking club. and we're freaking nuts. We're crazy. What's wrong with him? He had to figure out. At 23 years sober, you had to hit another bottom. You'll find you have to hit more. You have to. There are many, many other bottoms waiting for you. Read the seventh step. They're all there waiting for you. They're the bottom with the romance, the bottom with the sex, the bottom with the money, the bottom with the why don't you love me, the bottom with, yeah, there's so many bottoms in this deal, you know, until you finally realize what you got to do. And they tell you what you got to do, but nobody does it. Nobody wants to, because we're all half measure. It says half measures well is nothing, but I'm a half measure kind of guy. It says God is everything or God is nothing. He says, well, what do you mean everything? I mean, let's not get crazy about this, you know? You got to get rid of your old ideas. The result is nil. I mean, what do you mean old? I don't even know what my old ideas are because they seem good to me and they're all fucking bullshit. You know what I mean? How do you learn about your old ideas as you go along in life? You know, and sometimes you get like an epiphany. You get some sort of epiphany, you know, like, you know, a major thing that happens and all of a sudden you see something. But just like it says in Appendix 2, most of our deals have to do with the most of our spiritual awakenings is of the educational variety. The educate, you know what, you want to read, you know what the educational, has anybody ever heard that? Has anybody ever read the Appendix 2? Listen, everything I'm giving you here, I promise you this. You look it up. It's straight out of the big book of the 12 and 12 with Dr. Robert Goodall. Now, I can say it fast because I've gotten to the point in my life, and I'm not perfect. I'm as nuts as the last guy. But the problem is when you start living the AA life and try to do this thing, even in a crappy way, over and over again, and get beaten down and beaten down and beaten down with the sponsors and the steps and everything over a period of 40 years, you either drink or die or blow your brains out or get with the program. Once you start getting with the program, you don't have to do the steps. You become the steps. You just do them. You don't sit around and say, oh, that was the third step. Oh, I think I did a fourth step. Oh, man, that was the 12th step. You know, these things that you so amazing. You're just living your life like the big book. So you can come up here and you can talk about your life. And it's all straight out of the book because you've read it so many times. You've done it. You've been beaten into submission. And that's the deal. But I don't think there's anything. I got people that come up to me after I'll do a talk or something like this. Oh, I loved it when you said this. You know, it was so incredible. I said, you mean when I said selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the real basis for our problem? Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on toes of others, they retaliate, seemingly without provocation. But we see that basically the problem has been in ourselves, that we tend to make decisions based upon self, which puts us in a position to be hurt. So it's alcohol, the self will run riot, that we use those to think so. Yeah. Above it, everything, we must get rid of that selfishness we muster kills us. God makes a promise. He says, yeah, when you said that, you mean when I quoted the big book. Says, yeah, but it's like the way you say it. You know what I mean? Oh, you mean because you read it a million times, but you never really saw it. He says, yeah, but now I see it. He says, that's because one of the consequences of being an alcoholic is you're going to read the big book 300 times and never really read what the fuck it says. It is actually possible for an alcoholic to be told by a judge or by a wife or something, if you do that one more time, you come home drunk one more time, I'm throwing you out of the house. And an alcoholic can actually drive 3 blocks away, because I've done this, to a light and stop sober and say this. What the hell do you mean by that? Because one of the consequences of being an alcoholic is when you hear, see, or are told something that you don't like, it confuses you. You know what I mean? Now you could be a brilliant astrophysicist. You could have degrees up the ass. And somehow life is very confusing when somebody tells you something that you don't want to hear. You know, you don't even hear it. You say, who's this asshole? You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, that's pretty much what you say to everybody if you're an alcoholic. Look at that asshole. I was a bar drinker. I used to sit in bars and I'd watch some guy walk into the bar. I'm sitting with my friends and he's with a good looking blonde. I'd say, look at that asshole. I knew he was an asshole. You know what I mean? You ever meet guys like that? They got shit you want and you don't have it, you know? All jerks, you know? I mean, that's if you're not fucked, that's what you think. You see the world as a bunch of assholes that have things that you don't have, and you're the only guy that doesn't have it. You know? You know, when you live life that way, and that's your life, and that's the way you digest the world, and guess what? You think you're normal. Your alcoholic life seems the only normal one. You can't separate the two from one. You don't even see there's anything wrong. Not only that, you tend to hang around people that think of life the exact same way as you do. They're your buddies. They're the only people that understand you. That's why I hung around with Bob's. They're the only bars. They're the only people that understand me. And you know what's terrible? I still can't get rid of it. I'm still hanging around alcoholics. You just can't get rid of it. This is like the bars in our town are just like, it's like the waiting room for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we just sort of hang around there until we get to AA. You know, so you come in, you don't know your story. So what happened? And we're very well defended, right? You know, you're not going to tell me anything. You start talking to me about anything. Even if you're trying to help me, I'm saying, what the hell are you, Mondrian? You got your program. I got my. You're thinking about so many ways. I've got loophole-aholic. In other words, when I read the book, I look for every loophole. Every suggestion, help. Let me tell you something. The only thing I do in AA is if I ever get serious and get a sponsor, he says, make the freaking coffee. And I make the coffee. You know, you suggest I make the coffee, I ain't making it. You tell me to make the coffee. You tell me to go to that meeting. You know, I have to have a in my head to do stuff. That's kind of how balls I have. And I don't have a story. You know how I learned my story? You can't tell people who they are and what they are. What the hell do you know? You don't know me. So what happens is you sit in a room. You got a flanking alcoholic. Sit in a room like this. Some guy is up here like I'm up here. And he tells a story. And you look at him and say, man, that guy is freaking nuts. And then all of a sudden you say, shit, I was doing that last week. You know, that's how you learn about your story. You know, you don't you have your defenses down. You just listen to somebody else's story and say, man, I did that. And next thing you know, you start thinking about your life. And all of a sudden, you have a story. You have stories about how you were before you were drinking. You got stories about what happened while you were drinking. And then every day, every single day, because you're an alcoholic unfit for the planet Earth, you got story after story after story that happens to you. And they're all about victories over alcohol. They're all about, I got into an accident, I was going to kill the guy, blah, 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 and bam, you know, and you got a story. And some of the stories are pretty incredible, and they're your stories, you know, because we're just built that way. We're just insufficient, whatever it is. It's like, you know, I like some guy, I remember he said, and I loved it so much, it was so true. It's like we're all up in heaven, the little babies, and we're coming down this conveyor belt. You know what I mean? Here they come down the conveyor belt, all these little babies ready to go to Earth, and God's up there with a spritzer, you know, and he's you know, the baby goes, spritz. He's spritzing them with the insulation. You know, the babies. Spritzing with the insulation to insulate you from the horse shit that's going on down here. Have you seen what's going on out there? I mean, incredible. Even if you don't see what's going on there, if you turn on the TV, they'll show you shit from 10,000 miles away. You know what I mean? They'll tell you shit from the moon, you know. Yeah, it's brought right to you. You see the shit that's going on out there? The crap? How people, you know. And you know what happens? So the God sort of spritzes you with the insulation.
Good.
So you can handle the fucking bullshit without blowing your brains out. You know what I mean? And so I'm coming down the conveyor belt. You know what I mean? And somebody, and he's about to spit, and he says, oh, God. And he says, yeah. I go fucking right by. You know what I mean? And I don't get the insulation. You know what I mean? And I'm down here with you whack jobs, you know. And how are you going to handle that deal? When you're restless, irritable, and discontented. My problem isn't drinking. I drank fine. My problem is, what do you do when you're sober? Mm. And I have a real problem because no matter how much I drink, I always get sober. It's like my kidneys are my enemy. My liver is killing me. Keeps on sobering me up. I was doing okay when I was drunk. So what happens? So we don't have much. You know, my sponsor used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money. The man with the money will walk away with an experience. So the only thing I've gotten over 40 years, the only thing that's happened to me is I've been beaten down, you know, 40 times more than the guy who's got like 38 years. You know, I've just been beaten down more. I've made more screw-ups. I've screwed up more. I've had to learn more lessons, you know, the way we learn lessons, over and over and over and over again. I've touched the stove 10 million times. Like, maybe I shouldn't touch that, you know? And then I've learned, and I've been beaten down, and all that sort of stuff. And And that's the deal. And you either learn the lesson or you drink or you drug or whatever it is. And that's the deal. That's how it works. So, but I have one thing. I got one thing. I got stories. I got 40. I'm 72 years old. I got 72 years of stories. I got stories before the drinking. I got stories during the drinking. I got so many stories after. I got stories I forgot. And you know what they're all about? They're all about alcoholism. I know they're all about alcoholism because they're all about me. And I'm a fucking alcoholic. So I can't tell a story without talking about alcoholism. If I tell a story when I was drinking, it's going to be a story about alcoholism. I tell a story before I came to, it's still going to be about alcoholism. I tell a story about what happened to me during my first year, so it's going to be about alcoholism. I just tell the story. People say, holy shit, he's talking about me. And I'm talking about me. But the bottom line is that old idea that I'm so unique that I can't even talk in an AA meeting. What do they think about me? Because all I do is think about me. I either think about me or tell myself I don't give a shit what they're thinking about. You know, I bounce back and forth. I say, I don't give a shit what they think about me. And then I think about what they're thinking about me. You know, and I do that deal for a while, which is always fun. Then you get to go to sleep and with people in your head, renting space in your head. And so one of the things, the only thing I've ever done, and they told me the only way to have a good AA meeting is to be sincere. Once you learn how to fake that, you got it made, you know. And so what I try to do is I try to tell stories about my alcoholism and what's going on. Oddly enough, I mean, you'll find this hard to believe. If I tell a story, no matter what story I tell about myself, whether it's when I was drinking or before I started drinking or after I stopped drinking, oddly enough, would you believe this? Whenever I tell a story about my life, it's a story about alcoholism. And maybe the circumstance will be different, but there'll always be somebody who says, man, I identify with that. Because I'm an alcoholic and I have alcoholism. And our alcoholism, one of the things that's great is we're all like twins. I know we all think we're different, but this thing wouldn't work if we were that different. The only reason this thing works is because we gather up in a room and I honestly tell a story and say, holy shit, that's me. I didn't even realize that. That guy was talking. That's the reason it works. Because I'm just you a few years down the road, getting pounded a few more times, you know what I mean? And so my stories, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like now. So the greatest thing we've been given is our stories. And let me tell you something, our stories are well earned. And it's all about life, how life treated us, what happened, how we were thinking, and how we didn't drink. Or maybe how we did drink. And about this disease and alcoholism, and somewhere down the road, you get the realization that alcoholism, the real disease, does center in your mind, not your body. It has to do with being insane. It has to do with growing up, and you just got this. You may have to hang in here 10, 15 years to see, you know, the first step of getting out of jail is knowing you're in jail in the first place. Really, unless you know you're in jail. Yeah, I spent many years drinking, didn't even know I had a problem. Then all of a sudden, bam. It's like a bright light. Man, I got to stop drinking, you know? I'll do anything to stop drinking. So you get out of that alcoholic cage, that jail, and then you spend the next 10 years realizing you got a woman or a man problem or a romance problem or a sex problem or a money problem or I got to have that thing problem or a world problem or all that crap, you know? And then it takes a long time to get over that because they're addictions too. Because if I'm not using alcohol, I'm using the women. If I'm not using alcohol, I'm using, what do you think about? If I'm not using alcohol, I'm using the cars. I'm using the bar. I'm using everything I can grab on or get or have. If I only had this. And I grab this stuff because it works. Because when I walked in the bar with that good-looking blonde who's like looking at me, you know, like, oh, I love this guy. I'm like drunk with wonderfulness, you know? I'm drunk. With one of them, I think women probably go through the same. Walking with a guy, I'm drunk with wonderfulness. All of a sudden, I feel like I'm worthy because I need a man or a woman to feel worthy because deep down inside, I am totally fucking unworthy, but I'm never going to show you that. I'm going to act like I'm worthy or I feel worthy. And the last thing I want is to feel unworthy. That's why I'm never going to do a meeting. They're going to ask me to do a meeting. I'm going to say, oh, I'm not ready. Alcohol code for I'm scared. They'll all think I'm stupid. Because I know I'm stupid. And then they'll see I'm stupid. And I ain't going to do that. And that's the way we live our lives until the day we die, never really living, never really rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, never really experienced much of heaven. And that's the true alcoholism. And that's the sad thing when you see a guy who's 23 or 24 or 30 years sober and hasn't gotten over that shit and thinks he's doing okay. Well, I'm fine. How you doing? How you doing, Bob? Hanging in there. Oh, fucking hang around here for 30 years so I can be fucking hanging in here, you know? I'm hanging. So I got a story for you. I got a story. I'll tell a story. So this is a story I have to test that. Or maybe. Or it's about a story about a 10-step that never happened. Or maybe it's a story about the 10-step that happened too well. And if it's a story about the 10-step, then it's a story about the 9-step. And it's also a story about the 8-step. Because it's the 10-step. And then it's also a story about the 4-step. Because the 10-step is continuing to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, probably admit it. So it's also a story about the 5th step. It's also a story about the 8th step. It's also a story about the 9th step. And then we, you know, and it's about all that stuff. So it's a story about the 10th step, or maybe not. It's about a story about the 10th step that never happened. So I think. I don't know. You're going to be the judge of that. You'll decide what this story is, or it'll be nothing to you. So, 8 years ago, I think it's about 8 years ago. I'm not sure. It's a true story. The best ones are the truth. You can't make this shit up. You think I'm like a playwright? Oh, let me try to figure out what story to tell tonight. The great thing about this disease. This is as long as you're on the planet, you know what I mean, and you haven't had a lobotomy, you're going to be given these stories all the time, you know, and you just wake up and smell the roses. You're given all sorts of shit all the time. Just tell them a story about what's going on in your life. So I'm 72 now. I'm married 40 years. 40 years. My wife's an Al-Anon. The lady's perpetual revenge. Does an Al-Anon 10-step. When I'm wrong, she probably admits it. You know what I mean? And I got like 4 kids that I raised sober and 7 grandkids and all of 3 or 4 dogs. I don't know what I got going. Self-supporting through my own contributions most of the time. So here's the deal. So about 8 years ago, I don't know how long old I would have been, 62, 65, how old were you? 72, 64, okay? Close enough for government work. So my wife was like turning 60. I got all these great kids, you know, I have grandkids. I got one grandkid named, I'll give you one grandkid story. This is Andrea, cute as a bunny. Well, they're all like teenagers now, I don't know. But she's like 4 years old, very cute. And, you know, my wife is tough, you know what I mean? So I have to call them all the girls. I have 3 daughters, and I got like 4 granddaughters. So I'm like surrounded by all these women, you know, and they're great. But so one day I'm sitting in my home office, my wife's in the kitchen, and Andrea comes up, he's like 4 or 5 years old. She says, "Grandpa, what kind of fish are you?" I said, "What?" He says, "What kind of fish are you?" I said, "What kind of fish am I?" He says, "Yeah, what kind of fish are you?" I said, "I don't know, Andrea, what kind of fish am I?" He says, "You're a selfish." And my wife laughing, you know what I mean? I'm like the Rodney Dangerfield of alcoholics. So that's the crap. That's the stuff I'm living with, you know? You know, the standard wife stuff. You've never changed. You know, I ought to go that day and tell them what you're really like. I think they know, but you go ahead and tell them. You explain it to them, you know, that kind of stuff. So she's turning 60, so I say to my wife, and it's a very strange thing because she's 45 now. But I don't know how that worked, but she was 60. And so I said, "So what do you want to do? What do you want to do on your birthday?" So I knew what she was going to say because this is what we do all the time. Not so much now because the kids are all scattered, but she says, "Well, I want to go out to dinner with all the kids, you know, get all the kids, go out to dinner, you know, kids, grandkids." So I knew that was going to happen. So I said, "We'll pick a restaurant." Of course, she's peaked. She picked some expensive French thing or something, restaurant. And I'm like prepared for that because it's the kind of stuff you got to do, you know. One of the reasons I stay married for 40 years, let me tell you the secret of staying married for 40 years. The secret is very simple. Number one, always say you're right. You're right. You know, you are the worst husband. You are the worst, most selfish husband in the world. I said, right again. You know, you have a chance at all. Hey, right twice, you know. You never take out the garbage. Hey, third time's a charm, you know. Say, oh, you're pathetic, you know. Right four times, you know. Just don't argue. And if she says, I need money, just give it to her. Give it to her. Just give her the money. It doesn't matter if it's the last time. Just give it to her. You'll be happier if you just do that. Just give her the money. You know what I mean? And that's the deal. And try and develop the ability to not have any clue as to what's going on around you. That's the point. Alcoholics are very, very alert to the way people look at them, the way they act and roll their eyes and everything. A lot of people, like my wife, thinks it's senility. Like I have dementia, you understand me? She doesn't realize I've worked the steps for 40 years to get to the point, so I have no clue as to what's going on around me. You know what I mean? No clue, you know? She'd be saying, my sponsors will say, did you hear what your wife just said to you? I said, no. People come up to me and say, what do you think about this? I said, I don't. You know, I don't know. Is that senility or just self-protection? So I get together. We're gonna go to dinner. So, I got all my kids, I got like about 14, 15 people go to this dinner. I know it's gonna cost me a bunch of money. You know what I mean? But it's okay. I got some plastic. They gave it back to me after I lost all my plastic. I don't know how that happened. My sponsor once told me, he said, when you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. I didn't understand that. You know what I mean? But I learned it around 10 years, and that's why. By the way, that's what he said. I said, I don't know about the money thing. He says, 10 years sober. He says, I got the answer for you. He said, you got the answer? Absolutely. He said, I said, what? He said, earn more or spend less. I said, what would be the third option? You know what I mean? I don't understand that, you know. Sense to me. I was making a lot of money and I was always broke. Because apparently, you know, it has to do with not what you make, but what you spend. In any event, so the next thing that happens, so she picks up this restaurant. They all can descend upon the restaurant. I got my Amex card. I know I'm going to be okay, I think. You know what I mean? And so I'm sitting at the table, and there's these 14 people, and I'm looking at the, here's what I'm doing in my mind. Here's what's happening in my mind. I don't know if you've ever been in this situation. I'm calculating. I don't look like I'm calculating. I look like I'm sober. This is not necessarily sober, but I look like I'm sober. Because I'm not saying anything, I'm just sitting there. Believe it or not, when I'm with my wife and with my family, I say nothing. You wouldn't recognize me. You'd say, Russell's been sitting there for 2 hours, he hasn't said a thing. I don't say a thing. I'm on the lowdown, you know what I mean? Because I don't want to make myself a target. Because if I say anything, trust me, I'll be a racist, homophobic pig. You know what I mean? They'll attack me like a son of a bitch. You know what I mean? So I say nothing like I'm not even there. You know, because I know what I actually am for that group is the wallet. You understand? So I just show up, you know, and that's the deal. It's okay. I don't mind it. It's not a big deal. So I'm sitting there at the restaurant, and I'm calculating. You know, I'm looking at the appetizers, you know, $25 for a shrimp cocktail. And I'm looking at the average, you know, $40. So I'm drinking, you know, $50, $60 a person. You know, probably one order of wine. So my problem is, okay, then I'm preparing myself to spend whatever the hell I'm preparing to spend. And of course, Andrea says, this is true, this is what she says. Says, Mommy, she turns to her mother, Vanessa, she says, Mommy, can I have a shrimp cocktail, $25? Oh, sure, honey, Grandpa will pay for it, no problem. So the shrimp cocktail is $25. She takes one bite out of the shrimp, says, ooh, I hate that stuff. $25 down the drain, you know what I mean? It's like, whatever, you know, but I mean, you know, so this is my mind. And whatever it is, what was that, like 30 years sober, whatever it is, I'm thinking about, okay, let me get through this with the kids and everything and all that stuff. And we come to the end of the deal, you understand? And I give them the card, and then I got to go through my mind, I have the thing going through my mind. I wonder if when American Express gets this, they'll say, isn't this the guy we took all the cards away from? You know, and they're going to say, I'm sorry, it was declined, you know what I mean? But I get through that. And so I'm driving home. I'm going to go home with my wife, and we're all split up, and my daughter, Vanessa, now I know you guys don't know Vanessa, so I'm not going to explain it too much to you, but Vanessa is wonderful. She's married a wonderful guy in the program, Armando, and she's absolutely wonderful. She have three gorgeous kids, you know, and special guy, just a special guy, real serious about the program. And I told him, I said, can I marry Vanessa? I said, just make sure you go to a lot of meetings, buddy. You know what I mean? Don't ever stop going to the meetings, you know? And so stuff, gal. But let me tell you about Vanessa. Vanessa came home one day. He's like 18, I don't know, like 20 years, 18, 19 years old, to our house. And she noticed somebody, a robber, big robber, man, was like breaking into the window. And he saw her and he started running. She started running after him. And she ran like 10 blocks and she tackled him. That's Vanessa. And she looks like Erica. She looks like Erica. That's Vanessa. She's not like big. Yeah, she looks like Erica. She tackled the guy and the police came. And so that's Vanessa.
That would be an idea. I wouldn't mess with
Erica. Yeah, I would. You don't want to mess with Erica or Vanessa, you know? And so in any event, so the bottom line is that we get to the end and Vanessa says, you drive me. For whatever reason, I was driving. It was my wife and me and Vanessa. Okay? And Vanessa's in the back seat. So one of the things that I, one of the things I have is I'm a coffeeaholic. I mean, I've shared with you with this, but I just love coffee. Drink a lot of coffee. 11 o'clock at night, I drink coffee. It helps me go to sleep. You know, I don't understand it. It's like Ritalin or something, you know? I just.
Just like.
Yeah, it's just like Ritalin. Okay, so I say, honey, we gotta stop at Publix because we're out of coffee, and she says, okay, stop and we'll get coffee. And Vanessa says to me, says, Dad, I'll get the coffee for you. I said, really? She says, absolutely. You just stop the car, I'm running to get the coffee for you. And so I turn to her and I say, so Vanessa, I drink Folgers, 100% Colombian coffee. That's the coffee. It's like the blackish, you know, it's got like an arrow to the yellow. It goes to the, it's like, it points to the black part of the chart. It's like the strongest coffee they got. That's what I drank. She says, okay, Dad, okay. So I pull up to Publix, and she starts to get out of the car. She says, now, Vanessa, remember, it's the Folgers, Columbia. She says, Dad. I said, what? He says, I heard you the first time. You ask me one more time, I'm not getting crap for you. You know, you understand what I'm saying? I said, yeah, sure, no problem. You know, don't hit me, you know. So she goes in. 30 seconds later, she comes out with the Publix bag, you know, one of those plastic bags. And the coffee says, here you go. I said, thank you very much. So I drive her home, drop her off. Then I drive home. It's like 10 o'clock at night, 10:30, 11 o'clock. So I figure maybe I'll make myself some coffee, you know what I mean? And I open up the coffee, and it's like, the morning, I don't even know what they call it, the morning blend bullshit stuff. I mean, I'm telling you. And I'm thinking in my mind, you know, I take everybody out. I'm happy to do it. I spend, like 900 fucking bucks on everybody, you know what I mean? I'm not getting any thanks. Nobody's thanking me. I ain't even looking for thanks. You understand what I'm saying? All I want is my flipping coffee. And I get the decaf shit. And not only that, what makes it even worse is this is after she says this shit, you tell me one more time, I'm not stupid. You know what I mean? Something like, what did she like do it on purpose? I mean, what is this shit? So I'm saying to myself, have you ever seen the movie The Big Lebowski?
Yeah.
I say to myself, this cannot stand. This will not stand. You know, no, really, this is, the universe is askew. I can't let her get away with this. She's thinking, she's at home right now, thinking she did me a favor. After you tell me this shit, you know what I mean? And she got me the wrong freaking coffee. After telling me that shit about the coffee, this is not gonna, I'm gonna call her up. It's 11 o'clock at night. I'm calling her up and I'm gonna tell her that she got the wrong damn coffee for me. You understand? That's what I'm gonna do. So I start to go to call her up, and then all of a sudden this thought comes on. He says, you know, if I call up Vanessa, here's what's going to happen. She's not going to hear it. All that she's going to hear me say is, I'm your father, and I think you're a loser. And women should never have a man tell them they're a loser. And certainly daughters should never have their father tell them they're a loser. They should be lifted up. So I don't make the phone call. I forget about the whole thing. That's the end of the phone call. And here's the deal. And says, so guess what? Here's guys, and you know, and so that was an amends I didn't have to make. And I know guys in AA that haven't spoken to their kids in 10 fucking years because they made the damn phone call. Now, is that a 10th step? Before you answer that, if you read the 10th step, it says, now remember I had 32 years, it says, if we do this over and over again, it says what happened is we learned something called restraint of tongue and pen. Because somewhere during this exercise of doing the 10th step and making amends, and doing the 10th step and making amends, and doing the 10th step and having all these people in your head and making amends, you ultimately get to the point you say, I hate this making amends shit. You know, this is driving me nuts. And you learn this really important lesson that most alcoholics don't learn. It takes years to learn this. This is advanced AA, you know, that if you don't do stupid shit, you don't have to apologize for it. Is that fucking amazing? It's like if you don't spend the money, you don't go broke. If you don't say stupid shit, it's like it's back to John Wayne. Life is tough, and if you're stupid, it's even tougher. And so from working this 10th step for, you know, 30 years, I don't know what happened. I just didn't make the phone call. So either that is the 10th step, or it's a 10th step that never happened, or maybe, I don't know. It's not the 10th step. I don't know what it is, but I'll tell you what, it makes life a lot easier. Now, I will tell you this, because I'm totally honest. I've told that story before at conventions. And Vanessa got hold of one of the tapes. But it wasn't so bad. She only didn't talk to me. So ultimately, the way God worked, she did hear it, you know what I mean? But it was like 3 years down the road, and she only didn't talk to me for 4 days. You know what I mean? It was, I could handle it. It wasn't so bad. You understand? So thank you very much.